Okay, good afternoon. Today I'd like to announce further progress in the establishment of a Royal Commission of Inquiry following the earthquakes in Canterbury. Cabinet has agreed on two names to sit as commissioners with the Chair, Justice Mark Cooper. The two people I will recommend will be appointed as commissioners are Sir Ron Carter and Associate Professor Richard Fenwick. Their appointments, once confirmed by the Governor-General, mean the Royal Commission will be able to call on their experiences in analysis, problem-solving and engineering. Sir Ron Carter has a considerable background in the engineering sector as a former Managing Director of Becker Carter Hollings and Ferner Limited and is currently a Director of Rugby New Zealand 2011 and the Rural Equities Limited. He has extensive governance experience, including chairing the Civil Aviation Authority, and has led a number of high-profile reviews, including the 1999 review on the management of New Zealand's borders and Auckland's water shortages. He is a distinguished fellow of the Institution of Professional Engineers. Richard Fenwick is an adjunct associate professor in civil engineering at the University of Canterbury. He is a leader in the field of earthquake engineering and is internationally renowned for his work in the design of seismic resistance reinforced concrete structures. He was awarded a Companion of the New Zealand Order of Merit in 2010 for services to engineering. The Royal Commission's terms of reference have also been finalised. The Commission will be supported administratively by the Department of Internal Affairs and the Minister responsible will be the Attorney-General, Kristen Lisson. The terms of reference require the Commission to look at two major areas. First, an inquiry into buildings in the Christchurch CBD, looking specifically at what factors lead some buildings to fail severely, why some buildings' failure caused extensive injury and death, and why buildings differed as to the extent to which they failed and caused injury or death. That will mean looking at, amongst other things, the characteristics of buildings which may have led to failure, for example, age, location, and whether buildings conform to earthquake risk best practice. The second major area the Royal Commission will inquire into is legal and best practice requirements. It will look at the adequacy of current legal and best practice requirements for the design, construction and maintenance of buildings in central business districts in New Zealand. The Royal Commission will report back by the 11th of April 2012. That will also release an interim report after 6 months. The interim report will contain interim recommendations that inform early decision making on rebuilding and repair work. The final report will present findings on the matters I have outlined as well as the Royal Commission's recommendations for, firstly, one, any measures necessary or desirable to prevent or minimise the failure of buildings in New Zealand due to earthquakes, secondly, the costs of those measures, and thirdly, the adequacy of legal and best practice requirements for building, design, construction and maintenance, in as far as those requirements apply to managing risks of building failure caused by earthquakes. Just moving on to another topic, I'm also announcing today my up-and-coming visit to the United Kingdom and France. As you are aware, this visit follows the cancellation of planned trips to Europe in September last year and March of this year due to the Canterbury earthquakes. During my visit, I will attend pre-Anzac Day services in France and spend Anzac Day itself at a series of commemorations in London, including the dawn service at Hyde Park. While in London, I will meet British Prime Minister David Cameron, and I'm looking forward to talks with him and other members of the British coalition government. The trip will help cement the close government-to-government links we have with the UK. New Zealand's relationship with the UK is a deep one, built on strong ties between our people and our businesses and our shared outlooks. In London, I will also give emphasis to the Christchurch earthquake appeal, and I'll attend a private audience with Her Majesty the Queen, as well as meet His Royal Highness the Prince of Wales. These engagements have been rescheduled from the two earlier cancelled visits. I'll also be travelling to Paris to meet with President Sarkozy and other senior government representatives for formal talks. New Zealand has a wide-ranging relationship with France, and I look forward to discussing our cooperation in the Pacific and in Europe and on G20 issues as France prepares to host the next Leaders' Summit. The trip will be completed with when I attend with my wife, Brona, the royal wedding of His Royal Highness Prince William and Catherine Middleton at Westminster Abbey. As you're probably aware, Petrobras has been granted a 5-year licence to carry out seismic exploration work in the Rocamora Basin. They are a few days into a 60-day program, but have been subject to protests from Greenpeace and others. New Zealand is a democracy where we respect people's rights to protest, but we also respect the rights of other people to carry out legal activities, like Petrobras is. The police are currently exploring all of their options, and the minister is getting advice on the activities. The government is conscious of environmental issues, and we are in the process of introducing legislation that will address environmental concerns for deep sea wells. It is the government's view that we can balance those environmental concerns with the desire of a great many New Zealanders to create better jobs and better incomes. There's been some debate in recent days about the level of New Zealand's incomes. The government remains committed to closing the wage gap with Australia. A significant amount of Australia's higher wages actually come from their ability to harness minerals, and it's important we don't cut off every option that would help us close that gap. In terms of the House this week, when the House resumes tomorrow, the government intends to go into urgency to introduce and pass legislation to respond to the Canberra earthquake. The government will also look to make further progress on bills on the order paper. In terms of ministerial activity, my activity this week, tomorrow and Wednesday, I'm in Wellington. On Thursday, I'm in Christchurch, and on Friday, I'm in Rotorua. And on Saturday, I'll be at the V8 supercar event in Hamilton. Finally, a word about the good work the Chief Science Advisor, Professor Sir Peter Gluckman, is doing in his role. Last week he released a report on science education for the 21st century. Today he released a discussion paper on the better use of evidence in policy formation. I think it will be of some interest, especially to public service leaders seeking to improve the quality of public policy advice. It will be available on the website www.pmcsa.org.nz from today. Well, I don't think he was advocating that. He's just simply saying that those lower wages at the moment present an opportunity to attract some investment in New Zealand. Now, the government remains totally committed to closing the wage gap with Australia, and in fact, I think we've made progress in a real after-tax sense in closing that wage gap. But there are some companies that are coming to New Zealand because, at the moment, we represent good value with high-quality people.
You did say it was an advantage, though. Do you agree?
Well, in the case of someone like Canon, who set up their call centre in Auckland, which is quite a high quality call centre, then I think that was one of the reasons why they came over. But from the government's point of view, we want to lift wages in New Zealand. We'll use every advantage we've got, whether it's a competitive exchange rate, whatever it might be. But the ultimate goal is to narrow that wage gap.
So, are you comfortable with this comment?
Yes. It's not really stating effect, then.
But you have said that wages, after tax wages, real.
Well, I can't remember the last time. I certainly haven't quoted a number today, but whatever numbers I've used, I have to go back and look at those. But my understanding is certainly we've narrowed that gap and we've lifted after tax wages.
Well, English talked about wanting to attract more foreign investment to New Zealand. Isn't that dangerous? And the fact that they would. I mean, profits and dividends repatriating offshore, shouldn't we be looking more for capital inside New Zealand?
Well, the government is committed to trying to lift the national savings rate so that we can fund more of our own economic activity, but we're also not opposed to foreign investment when it lifts wages and lifts jobs. And you've seen us make sensible changes to those conditions around overseas investment, and we'll continue to do so.
So does this admission that the wage gap is still 30%? Wider in Australia, between Australia and New Zealand. Does that mean that you've failed in attracting as much capital as you wanted to?
Well, again, I don't know if you identified what the wage gap was. You just simply said, as I understand it, that those wages are the source of some inbound investments. People take advantage of that opportunity. As I say, over time it would be my expectation, as you see that investment come in, then those wages actually will rise.
He also criticised Australia's reliance actually on the minerals boom and said it wasn't really sustainable, but New Zealand had a much, much better future with its commodities.
I haven't seen those comments. I mean, the speech that he gave was in Auckland. I don't think it was off I don't think it was off a prepared script, so I haven't actually read his particular comments. But look, it's a statement of fact that Australia has a very strong mineral base, and that's likely to provide large economic stimulus for Australia for a long time into the future. His point, I think, around New Zealand, as I understand it, is that we equally are blessed with a strong capacity to harness that commodity boom. It's just in a slightly different area.
Well, he said more so. He said the Australians were basically limited by being essentially relying solely on the Chinese construction industry, whereas New Zealand's commodity base was across the whole of the Asia Pacific region in terms of markets.
But it might have a fair point. I haven't looked at the analysis of these.
Is that something we use though as the marketing strategy for New Zealand? Come to New Zealand because in Australia, come to New Zealand because you face wage costs.
At the moment, New Zealand is certainly seen as a country which is high quality in terms of its people, and which, as a statement of fact, is slightly cheaper in terms of its wage rates than Australia. That doesn't mean that's going to remain the long-term position. As I said, the long-term objective is to lift those wage rates, but the question is how to do that. And the answer is you've got to ultimately lift productivity. Now, that's been the subject of extensive debate between the New Zealand Treasury and the Australian Treasury, New Zealand governments and the Australian government. That's why the government set up the Productivity Commission, because it's our view that we can lift productivity and lift wages. But it is a statement of fact that there's a wage gap there, and we're working hard to try and close that gap.
Are you considering
No, I wouldn't make that statement at the moment. What I can say is that the Minister of Police is looking at the options available, and we are looking at the law as it applies to the economic zone and considering all of our options in that regard.
Look,
it could be, but I wouldn't necessarily say that will be the option. So the area is unclear, although we have been getting legal advice on our options, and we'll get a report back on those as the day progresses.
And Orion is flying over the area. What's its role in this?
Well, one assumes it's an observer of what's going on.
Do you think that Greenpeace has gone too far? Should they can be charged?
Petrobras have a legal right granted by the New Zealand government to carry out their seismic work. In my view, they should be allowed to carry out that seismic work, because it's important that we understand what is the opportunities that present themselves in the Rocamara Basin. And no one's arguing that people don't have a right to protest, but when it actually stops the company carrying out what it's been legally granted the ability to do, then that concerns me.
Why is the minister getting advice as an operational matter for police?
Well, the minister simply getting advice on what the options are. Well, I'm sure the police are getting advice, but the advice is being presented on what the options are available to the police. Again, you know, that's something that would need to be considered. I mean, ultimately, how that might be administered is a matter which I can't answer today or right at this moment. But the important point is to clarify is exactly, you know, how the law applies in the economic zone and what the options available are.
What's the agency that is charged with monitoring environmental risk that might be associated with Petrobras's?
It's the Ministry for the Environment is responsible for putting together the legislation in terms of deep sea drilling, and the Minister responsible for that, Nick Smith, has been working on that legislation for some time. Now, Petrobras have the capacity to do a number of things by virtue of that licence, and that is both 2D and 3D seismic work. They also have the capacity to drill an exploration well, but they wouldn't be in a position to drill that well, even if they wanted to, prior to New Zealand passing that legislation, because that's quite well advanced.
So are you suggesting that happened directly?
No, we're not in direct police, we're simply taking advice on what the options are.
You're talking about considering giving consideration to that naval vessel. What are you weighing up here when you decide that will be involved?
Well, we're not. We're just simply taking advice on what the options are. You're in an interesting space in the economic zone. There's also issues about the nature of that boat, which is a foreign flagged vessel, and we're simply trying to understand exactly what you know, what our options are, what the options to New Zealand are.
So is the government going to do something?
No, I'm saying we're getting advice on what the options available to us are.
So knowledge that the Orion dispatched by the government, you said it was obviously there in an observational
capacity,
but do you know anything about it?
No, it wasn't aware of
the thing. Just like that, the legislation we just spoke about, which will establish a monitoring regime, which is environmental, will be in place before the picture of arrests begin, even exploratory drilling
process? Best advice I've had from the ministers.
Where do we expect that information?
I don't know precisely, but I mean, they've got a 5-year licence. It'll take a number of years for them to complete, well, not to complete their seismic work, but to be in a position where they might want to drill an exploratory well. So we would anticipate well and truly before then, the legislation in the EEZ will be tightened up.
Can you explain to us what the issue is there? Which vessel is foreign flagged? Is it the Petrobras
one? The Petrobras vessel, as I understand, is foreign flagged.
So it's inside the economic zone?
It's inside the economic zone, that's right.
So what's the legal issue? Doesn't New Zealand have sovereignty over that?
Well, there's a number of factors, and we can get you the at some point, I'm sure we can explain the confusion or at least the difficulty there, but it's not as simple as if it was in New Zealand's economic zone, if it was in New Zealand's legal jurisdiction. We have rights there, but they are different in the economic zone.
So in a sense, the police don't actually have jurisdiction there, do they?
Well, that's the fact that we're checking. I don't think you can make that statement, but we are just clarifying what all the options are there.
So what is it that you want to achieve, though? You want to stop closing?
Well, it's my view that Petrobras have the legal right to carry out their seismic work. That is what the New Zealand government granted them in granting them the licence, and they should be free to carry out that work, just as others are free to protest. But at the moment, the protests are in such a way that they're preventing that ship carrying out what they've been legally granted the right to do. And I think if that was happening on dry land, then the police would be in a position to do something about that. The question is whether the police are in a position to do something about that when it's in the EEZ, and that position's being clarified.
So where are you getting the legal advice from?
Crown Law.
Can there be any dialogue with Greenpeace about this? Can you ask people?
Again, you might want to take that up with Hekia Parata's office. I mean, I think in the course of recent times there have been some discussions, but the exact nature of those you'd want her to want to clarify with your office.
And have you got the Navy on standby in case you can clear view about that you can take action?
No, I wouldn't make that assumption at this point.
Have Petrobras asked for sort of intervention or asked for some help?
Again, you'd want to take that up directly with the minister. I know that she's had some discussions with Petrobras, but I'm not exactly sure what the nature of those conversations.
Sorry, I'm trying to establish whether the government's done this on its own fact or whether it's doing it as a result of some problem with Petrobras has identified.
Well, what is clear is that you've got a foreign flagged vessel in the EEZ, and at the moment the police are not doing anything to allow Petrobras to carry out their legally permissive activity. Now, that position needs to be clarified on what the police can or can't do.
To make the approach, that's the important thing. Has the government decided to look at this on the basis of what it's seen, or has Petrobras approached the government saying, we've got a problem keeping
it? No, the government is clarifying the law in that area.
At the request of whom?
Petrobras didn't ask. Well, I'm not aware of what conversations the minister has had with Petrobras, and you need to take that up with her office. I can't answer that question, what conversations she's had. But certainly we want to, as a government, understand the legal position there.
So if it turns out that Greenpeace is legally committed to do what they're doing, will you accept that?
Yeah, well, I'm sure they're legally permitted to protest.
Yeah, well, or sit in the water or in the void.
Yep. Well, the question is, with all of these things, making sure that parties are legally able to do what they're able to do, and that is that one party is able to protest, ensure that's right, but another party also has the legal right to carry out what they've been permitted to do. At the moment, that's not happening.
Isn't it that you're trying to establish that the New Zealand police have the right of arrest in those waters?
Well, what their jurisdictional rights are, yes.
Thank you.
it's not as straightforward as it looks.
Just on the earthquake legislation this week, Labor has suggested they've put up a series of amendments that they might look at it. Is it likely the government will take on board any of those amendments?
It may do. Again, you might want to have that discussion with Gerry Brownlee. He's been having discussions, as I understand it, with Trevor Mallard and others. Whether they ultimately will support the legislation and what amendments may or may not take place is something that we're in the process of having those discussions.
But you're confident that you've got the support?
We've certainly got support for the legislation as it's been introduced, or will be introduced tomorrow.
And will it reflect those cabinet papers that were released a couple of weeks ago when you announced CERA, and that it will be an extremely powerful organisation?
For the most part, yes. I mean, there's been considerable work by officials and others over the last few weeks. So, at the margins there are some changes, but the basis of the legislation is to ensure that this organisation and the Chief Executive enjoys very significant reserve powers so that the rebuild of Christchurch can happen as quickly as is practically possible.
What changes have
been
made?
I don't want to detail those. I mean, the Minister's going to put out a statement, I think, this afternoon or early tomorrow. Look, I understand it's. I mean, I don't think Ron Carter's actually still with them anymore. I think all of those conflicts have been considered, so I don't think that's an issue, but we'll check that way.
And what about the, on another matter, principles, both of no confidence in national standards? Were you briefed on that at all today?
Wasn't briefed on it. I mean, I briefly saw this statement, I think by Peter Simpson, isn't it? Look, my view is that the vast bulk of New Zealand schools are actually implementing national standards. There are a small group of schools that are choosing not to do so, but it's actually a very small group relative to the cohort of schools that sit in that area. And I actually think progress is being made. As I've said earlier in the year, there are areas where we can improve. We're working on those areas of improvement. There's technical advisory groups. We accept the areas around moderation and others where there's room for improvement. But just as we saw with NCEA, very new and large systems take some time to bed down, but over time, I think they enjoy widespread support. And it's my view that given time, national standards will fit into that category like NCEA does today.
There's been a discussion about Christchurch schools. A lot of the principals down there were quite upset with the minister's statement that national standards was more important, and they were saying that some of them didn't have operating schools, so let alone doing that sort of thing. Has there been any discussion about that and whether Christchurch schools will get any leeway, or that there be any recognition of that in the assessment that they have probably been through a major disaster?
There wasn't discussion about it at the moment. I think everybody acknowledges that when it comes to Christchurch, that you're dealing with a unique set of circumstances, and I think everyone in the education system right across the board will take that into consideration. It's not unique to national standards. That's also true of youngsters there completing their NCEA or other qualifications. And I think everyone will take a responsible view to that. There's an acknowledgement this was a major event. I mean, in the final analysis, national standards is ultimately about monitoring the progress of a child. It might be that the progress of some children is halted temporarily while they come to terms with the disruption caused by the earthquake. But over time, and this is a program run over the course of some of a youngster at primary school, in my view, that won't be a significant issue.
That's not the minister was going to schools in Christchurch.
Well, her point is that national standards are very important, and I agree with her. They are incredibly important. That youngsters can leave school being able to read and write properly is absolutely critical to the foundation of their capacities to compete in the modern economy.
But those kids' results, presumably, would be measured against other kids. And I know the league tables and the public aren't out there now, but they would still be assessed according to the same as someone in Wellington who hasn't been through it. And how do you feel about that?
Yeah, so again, I mean, what's important about national standards is the progress of the child and there'll always be some debate about the moderation, you know, both within schools, because there are often a number of classes at one level, moderation from one school to another in the same area, and then schools right around the country. And I don't think we should get too hung up on that at the moment. We'll be looking at the progress of those children over a reasonable period of time, and I'm sure the Ministry of Education and teachers and parents actually will acknowledge that this was a major event in Christchurch. It may well have some short-term impact on children, but over time, I'm sure it can be accommodated.
Do you think that the Labour list is decided by a gag on a gag?
Look, that's a matter for Labour. You know, I mean, it's they seem very consumed with themselves at the moment.
Do you think your list goes too far the other way?
No, I wouldn't say that. We haven't put together our list yet, so I can't really comment on it.
Could you tell us how many gays and how many unionists do you have in your caucus?
I can't. It's not one of the things that I do a spot check on. There's probably unlikely to be a lot of unionists in our caucus, but there could be some from the past. Whether someone's gay or not, don't care. As far as I'm concerned, it's their capacity to do the job.
You said this morning that AMI was going to face receivership if they didn't get the credit rating that they wanted.
Well, then get a capital injection.
But you said the credit rating, if they didn't get that credit rating.
Well, the trigger point here is that they face a review of their credit rating. They faced that a number of weeks ago, which is why the Minister of Finance issued a letter of comfort, and they face a major review at the end of April. If they hadn't had a capital injection by the end of, well, actually probably a couple of weeks ago, and certainly by the end of April, or the letter of comfort, then almost certainly they would have been substantially downgraded. That would cause significant issues to the company.
When was the last time you were in a supermarket?
Last Sunday, not Sunday before, not yesterday, but the Sunday before that. Why are you stalking me? Do you want me to pick up some shopping for you? Or is it sleep night? We're getting closer to that. I want to have a discussion with the Governor General, because of course both of us are attending. But I would only make one point, and that is that when Prince William was here in New Zealand recently, he reiterated to me that the primary gift that they would like is donations to their charities. And you know, he was very strong in his view there, that that's what's really important to them.
So just on AMI again, are you aware how big the capital injection needs to be by the end of April, or is it that?
Well, it won't need one effectively now, because it has recourse to the government's convertible creditors equity issue. I don't know prior to that, but look, the company's estimates was that it's somewhere between zero and minus $500 million in terms of its unaccounted liability, or unprovisioned liability.
Sorry, has anything changed on the AMI front? I mean, are you any closer to knowing whether you need to put any capital in?
No. Look, I mean, the sequence of events is the company is looking for a commercial solution. That's an injection of capital. The fullness of time, if it doesn't receive that, then depending on the extent of its liability, may have to recourse to the Crown.
Do you know when that's likely to be? When its options of some other private capital expires and your guarantee has to come in?
Well, it has quite a lot of cash. I mean, actually, in the short term, it has a lot of reinsurance and quite a lot of cash available to it, but of course, you know, it has long-term liabilities which are currently unquantified in Christchurch. So I think it's working very actively on looking for capital injection. I mean, clearly there are a number of companies that have put their name forward, and the public domain has been potentially interested.
There has been a fair amount of criticism of John Barnacle. Right. In general, the way you might operate, how long do you expect it to take before the government's people will get an understanding of how this company was operating and doing
everything correctly and with the most prudence. Yep, so this week we'll be appointing a director to AMI. Treasury have settled on a recommended name that they're giving to the Minister, so my expectation is that appointment would be made this week. We're also putting an advisor into the company so that we can understand exactly what's going on there. So, you know, and again, relatively quickly, we're in a position to understand more fully the exposure of the company. But in terms of its ultimate liabilities, that is going to take some time because it's a matter of assessing, you know, how many houses and what the full level of costs are likely to incur.
How realistic is a commercial solution? I mean, they wouldn't have come to the government for help if a commercial solution was available.
One issue is timing, so they are a mutual, so quite difficult for them to raise cash in a hurry as opposed to a company that, for instance, is part of a bigger group or listed on the exchange. So if you look at the other companies, they are part of much larger insurance groups or are publicly listed, so easier for them to raise capital. So I don't think it's impossible for them to raise capital. I think the issue is about how quickly they could raise capital. Okay. Thank you.